From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello and welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben, you are you, and that makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Now, we are looking at a developing situation, and in the past, guys, we've been hesitant to cover things like as they're unfolding, because a peek behind the curtain here, of course, and our super producer Paul Deccan will agree with us, hopefully, I'm sure. I'm looking at his body language. Oh, he's wishy-washy.
He's hedging.
He's hedging. He's hedging his bets. I respect that. We feel just terrible if we report on something that is occurring in the news, right? And by the time our episode comes out, the situation is completely changed.
Because, yeah. Spoiler, you guys, this is not live.
Correct.
Right.
We did this like a week ago.
The good thing about this specific topic is that the occurrence happened in 1963.
So that makes it a little easier.
We've got 50 plus years of history that we can cover and then bring in some of this new stuff that actually occurred around 1963.
Yeah. And we don't want to be old beans. I'm pretty good. I'm saying that now.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think it's working.
I think it's going to work.
Old beans?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, write in and let us know.
All right.
Are they moldy or just stale?
I'm using it as a term, a figure of speech. You guys are skeptical about Bag of Badgers, but that took off.
It really did.
It's true. Okay. What are we talking about today? Can we get to the thing for crying out loud?
Yes. Let's start with the facts, the brass tacks. President John F. Kennedy was assassinated on November 22nd, 1963, at about 12:30 in the afternoon in Dallas, Texas, while they were riding in a presidential motorcade. And in probably the biggest understatement of our entire show, all hell broke loose.
Yeah, it's true. And then you fast forward several decades, and there's a survey by a site called 538.com, and they found that only 33% of the people responding actually believe the findings of the official Warren Commission. That's the one that concluded in 1964 that the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, was responsible for the death of President Kennedy.
And today, 61% of the U.S. public believe that at least one other person was involved.
Yes, not just a single gunman.
So you guys know I'm kind of a Kennedy novice. Can you catch me up on the Warren Commission?
Sure. The Warren Commission. We've talked about this before on the show. Officially is known as the President's Commission on the Assassination of President Kennedy, which, I don't know, I feel like one too many presidents in there, but that's fine. I didn't name the
thing. Can you make it into an acronym for me? That helps me digest it a little better.
Ben?
Oh, the TPCOTAOPK.
No, that was better before. Go on, Matt.
Anyway, it was formed by the president that immediately followed the president's death.
Lyndon Johnson.
Correct.
Who, by the way, was a real pill.
Apparently he was a pill. A lot of accusations have been made about him and his involvement with the assassination of JFK over the years. We have not found any of them to be completely true, but there are some juicy details in there.
But has a very pleasant sounding name when you say the initials, LBJ. It's very mellifluous.
It is.
I just want you to know there was a thing, listeners, friends and neighbors, that Lyndon Johnson used to do. It was called the Johnson treatment. He would get in people's faces, like grab them by their lapels, foreheads inches away. He followed one guy into a bathroom, busted into the stall.
Yikes, that wouldn't fly today.
Yeah, while he was doing his business.
Well, he's a large gentleman as well, very tall and imposing.
Bit of a bull in a china shop kind of scenario.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what did old LBJ do?
Okay, so he formed the President's Commission on the Assassination of President Kennedy on November 29th, 1963, just a few days after President Kennedy was shot. And it was the whole reason to have this was to investigate what happened on that day.
Right, because people wanted answers, and the commission acted as quickly as they could. To this day, you can read their full report. Well,
Yeah.
Their quote-unquote full report. There we go.
All of the information that was given to the Warren Commission.
Quickly in government time isn't like days, right? I mean, this report likely took many months to
assemble. Yeah. This is not quickly in people time. It's quickly in government time. So they were racing to determine whether there was any truth, any sand to the multitudinous rumors surrounding this assassination. And the commission eventually concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone under his own power, no assistance from any criminal organization.
Intelligence agencies.
Any shady dude.
Or foreign government.
Or foreign government. That's very important. And that Jack Ruby, the man who would later assassinate Oswald, had no previous relationship with that guy either. So Jack Ruby, apparently, the story was that the lone gunman was killed by a lone gunman, and nothing is related. Nothing to see here, folks.
Yeah, no, none of the conspiracies you've been reading about, or anyone's been saying in papers, or these weird rumors. None of that's true.
Please continue with your regularly scheduled programming. And when the three of us started this show, one of the things that we wanted to do was to explore the stuff on the fringes, right?
Yeah.
And we stay away from the JFK assassination because there has already been so much work done on it, right? And
yes.
There's
Oliver
nothing.
Oliver Stone comes in and makes a movie and then a whole bunch of other conspiracy theories.
Back and to the left.
Yeah.
And nothing, you know, nothing that we would have found would have been new news. It would have been old beans.
Oh, boy.
I'm not giving up on it.
All right.
I'm telling you guys, it's going to work.
I respect your commitment to the
bit. No, Paul's saying no.
See, nobody gets old beans yet, but that's just because this episode hasn't come out.
I'm telling you guys, invest now. Get in on the ground floor of these various catchphrases. So the commission has a quote where they sum up this relationship.
Quote, "The commission made intensive inquiry into the backgrounds and relationships of Oswald and Ruby to determine whether they knew each other or were involved in a plot of any kind with each other or others. It was unable to find any credible evidence to support the rumors linking Oswald and Ruby directly or through others. The commission concluded that they were not involved in a conspiratorial relationship with each other or with any third party," end quote.
And there is some very important information that we'll get to towards the close of this show. To discuss specifically what may have been held to the chest to some of the intelligence agencies and not given to the Warren Commission specifically.
Right. So they're doing their best.
Yes.
The people on the Warren Commission are doing their best. I hate to steal a line from Beauty and the Beast, but the typical conspiracy stuff you're going to hear about the JFK assassination might as well be tale as old as time at this point. However, very recently, there were documents, files, a plethora, and I am using that word correctly, of files pertaining to the assassination that were classified for decades. And again, like in the past couple weeks as we record this, as Noel pointed out earlier, this is a bit of a time travel experience whenever you're listening to a podcast.
We're in early November when we're recording this.
It's November?
It's November.
What year is it?
Only just.
Okay.
Year of our Lord, 2017.
Oh, whoa, the whole time?
Yeah, yeah.
All year long.
Here we are then. So recently, several of these documents, a plethora of these documents were released, were declassified. And for years, people who do not believe the official story or the findings of the Warren Commission have been convinced that there will be some sort of great revelation that comes forth, right, in the public eye.
I have to put myself in that camp.
Yeah.
Honestly, because we've talked about these records being released by the past at least two presidents. When there's a date that comes up that's essentially, hey, if the president decides, he or she can release these documents. And every time that it's happened up until this year, they have said, no, we're not going to release the documents.
Yeah. Something always comes up.
Yes. So there is this thing. This act that Congress passed called the JFK Assassination Records Collection Act, which they passed in 1992.
Bush Senior, yes.
Yes, George H.W. Bush, that is George W. Bush's father.
Gotta do the voice, dude.
Yeah. Do the voice. You were doing the voice off air. It was so good.
Well, on October 26, 1992, my daddy passed this act. He signed it, and the final release date, because it's 50 years after, October 26, 2017. So that was a date that the current president used to release these documents.
Mr. President, question from the front. Hi, Ben Bolin, stuff they want you to know. What does this collection consist of?
I'm going to call you Old Beans. All right. let's jump back into real world, Matt. So I could I just need to go through some of this.
Sure. What's in this collection?
Okay, so this collection, it's basically all of the intelligence agencies and federal government organizations and agencies in the US. They got all the documents relating to the assassination of JFK, and they collected them all and they sent them over to the National Archives. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in this collection, it's approximately 5 million pages of records.
Jeez, like printed pages?
Yeah, we're talking Indiana Jones-style vault, just
top
going
men.
All the way up to four yeah. stories or whatever. 88% of these records are open and full. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge amount of 5 million records.
No one accidentally used a black highlighter on
well,
them.
Well, according –
I don't think there's any such thing as a black highlighter.
It's an awesome Onion article where it says the – where it's like FBI and CIA realized that they've been using black highlighters
that's amazing.
For decades.
I love that. I'm so sorry. That's so wonderful.
So no black highlighters in 88%. In 11% of them, they're released in part with the black highlighters going through.
Which would be stuff like – proper names.
Yes.
Right?
Addresses, maybe, you know, it's usually proper names and proper places, specific places that would be like a little dangerous or numbers.
That's where you see stuff like blank met with blank, approximately 12:40 p.m. at blank.
Yes.
On this blank.
Exactly.
And then they blanked.
Oh.
Oh.
About stuff.
About blank.
Yeah. So then 1%, there's a remaining 1% of this 5 million pages that is identified as assassin-related, and they remain completely sealed, or at least up until this year.
And there was a governing board that made the call here. So it, whenever we deal with government-related documentation or filing, we run into all these dry names.
Yeah.
So here's another one. The Assassination Records Review Board.
Yep.
The ARRB, Noel.
Thanks, buddy.
They are the ones who said you have to redact these 11% documents, mm-hmm. right? And then this 1%,
nobody can see
ever.
Who do you think they get to do the manual redacting? It has to be. It can't just be some intern. It has to be somebody
clearance.
Pretty high level
yeah,
with high
clearance.
Clearance, right?
Yeah, you have to have at that level compartmentalized
but
clearance.
What a crappy kind of sloggy job. Can you imagine just having to go through thousands of pages and just like X stuff out?
But I'm sure it's very process oriented.
And I bet it's viewed as highly important. I can imagine.
No, I think you're right. I don't mean to diminish it. I just mean like in terms of process, what a drag.
Oh, yeah. Sure. And that agency, it was a temp agency. It was there for a time and then it went away after it fulfilled its job.
Are you talking about ARB?
Yeah, ARB only lasted from 1994 to 1998.
Interesting.
And according to the act itself that Congress passed, all the records that were previously withheld, the 1% and the 11%, all of those records should be released on October 26, 2017, unless further authorized by the President of the United States.
Withholding.
Yes, for withholding. So unless the President decided or was told to decide to not release these documents.
Ooh, slippery slope, my
right? friend.
Right.
Which happened, again, previously at the other little – what do you call them? The road – The other markers where it could have been released or at least in part.
Sure. Yeah. And this, as you said, Matt, was signed by, President George H.W. Bush, mm-hmm. who was just in the studio with us a moment ago, on October 26, 1992, in July of 2017, the National Archives released almost 4,000 records, right? That included stuff from the FBI and the CIA and Some had been withheld in full in the past, and some were released redacted. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, friends and neighbors, the three of us spend a lot of time reading these terrible scans from like the vault, the FBI vault, where you can see someone has made some scribbled notes in the margins and gone over it to black out different parts of things. And they're tough to read. You know, it's a pain to read.
Yeah, it removes all this context. I mean, there's so much redacted that it literally strips it of largely any meaning, you know. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, and not to mention you're dealing with intelligence agencies that are making these, producing these documents. And a lot of times there are like cryptograms or there are anagrams. Like there are weird, there's weird stuff that goes on in some of these documents.
Not to mention they're already pretty dry.
Yeah.
So this, the banality of evil aside, which is what I'm going to categorize a lot of this redaction stuff as, the banality of evil aside, right? The inactions of good people aside, there is still a struggle to release this information.
Yes.
Whatever it might contain, right? And a lot of people wondered whether there would be some smoking gun, whether there would be some sort of memo from, you know, 1962 where one intelligence operative says to another, hey, I just got off the phone with so-and-so and they said that it's going down in Dallas, you know?
Yeah.
That is not the case.
There's some stuff that's kind of close to that, but it's not that specific. And that wasn't the only release. That July release was actually jumping the gun a bit on that October 26, 2017 date, because on the actual date, the National Archives released another almost 3,000 documents, which is huge. And this included a bunch of other stuff that they also released that was pertaining to that Assassination Records Review Board. A lot of the emails, well, they're emails from 1994 to 1998, so I wonder what that even looked like.
Forward.
Yeah, I don't know. But they released 52,000 plus emails and almost 17,000 files from that review board that actually decided what was going to be redacted and not. And then on November 3rd, just a few days ago, there was another release from the National Archives of 676 records. And this was Central Intelligence stuff that were previously denied entirely.
The CIA stuff, yeah.
Yeah, the CIA stuff. And you also have Department of Justice, Department of Defense, House Select Committee on Assassinations, and even stuff from the National Archives, like a single document.
So what does this all mean? You can also – I think that was excellent review of the chronology of this. You can, by the way, take a line from Matt and view all these files yourself.
You can read along.
Yeah, you can read along if you are willing to, again, put up with some poor quality reproduction, some scrawled notes and margins, and a lot of missing pieces, right?
It's a grueling journey if you want to go on it, but I really do think it's worth seeing the history.
Mm-hmm. And the big question is, to what end? Does this matter? Was there anything worth reading in there? We will tell you after a quick word from our sponsors, assuming we don't get assassinated during the break.
We're back, and I think we'll just jump right in with a couple of selected articles. A lot of these come from various news sources because we've kind of had to go through and research via the news with all of the official researchers who are going through all this stuff.
Yeah.
There's a gentleman being interviewed on CBS that I was watching just before we went in the studio, and he said he has this massive team of researchers and interns and all these people going through the documents, and he says they've been working on it since that July release, and they've gotten through about 8% of the newly released documents.
Why didn't we sic our team of interns and researchers on that?
Well, I mean, I guess we could have.
We don't have one.
We just sicked ourselves on it, which, you know, that's fine.
So we went to all the top-notch news sources that you're familiar with.
Yes.
Daily Mail, Teen Vogue.
National Enquirer.
Teen Vogue has been killing it lately, by the way.
I know, really.
I'm not kidding. Seriously. I'm not kidding. Like, seriously good journalism coming out of Teen Vogue.
I don't know. We're not, we did look around. And that's
honestly can't tell if he's joking.
I'm not. It's true. Ask anybody.
She's, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
See? And you're probably wondering, because we are moving a little quickly on this stuff, you're probably thinking, Matt, Noel, Ben, you guys obviously just checked with someone off mic about Teen Vogue.
Got the cosign.
You got the cosign. Who is this mystery person?
It is our new coworker, Kathleen Quillian, who is sitting in with super producer Paul, helping to engineer this session.
Yes, so, and she's going to play a big part in the Stuff Media family very soon, right?
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. So welcome, Kathleen.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, welcome. So, the point remains that when you're looking at this sort of stuff, it is paramount to investigate every single news source you can find.
Yes.
You should, regardless of whatever your starting point may be, ideologically, experientially, et cetera, you owe it to yourself to check as many things, especially things that come from places that you might disagree with. You got to get a lay of the land.
Exactly. Kind of be your own aggregator too. And it's like, because, you know, this is the kind of stuff where there are going to be, it's going to be mired in various opinions on one side or the other. So you kind of get the full picture. It's best to kind of like have a broad spectrum of material, which is what we tried to do. What Matt largely tried to do. This is his baby right here.
Yeah. Yes. Matt's our bloodhound on this one.
Well, and I actually found, just going to let everybody know, I found a CNN article that was in my opinion, the best kind of middle ground for all the sources I had been finding, everything from The Intercept to The Guardian and just everything in between, the Fox News. The CNN article hit the main documents that I found to be pertinent. Does that make sense?
It does. Give it to us.
Okay. So the first document involves a telephone call that was intercepted on September 28th, 1963, allegedly from Lee Harvey Oswald to a KGB agent in Mexico City.
This is a good one.
Oh, yeah. So this memo from the day of Kennedy's assassination, it talks about this call that was intercepted to the Russian embassy in Mexico. He spoke to the consul that I'm not going to try and pronounce the name.
Valery Vladimirovich Kostikov.
Yes.
Dang, dude. Well done.
This was an identified KGB officer, and this gentleman was speaking in broken Russian.
Can I interject here?
Yes.
There is one oddly – I hesitate to use the word funny, but I think it is funny. There is one odd side note. In this conversation, Oswald insisted – that the conversation be held in Russian.
Yes.
And his Russian was cartoonishly bad.
Yeah.
It's like on the level of saying bonus nachos instead of buenas noches if you speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. And to the point where the KGB folks were like having difficulty understanding him and probably going, do you mind if we speak English? And he's like, nyet.
But it seems like perhaps they knew there was some, you know, some eavesdropping going on, and maybe that was one of the reasons. But again, you're speaking to a consul at the Russian embassy in Mexico, and you're going to speak Russian. So I don't know. Maybe it's just, I guess, to hide amongst all the other conversations that occurred
that
day.
Sure. And the person who wrote the memo said that, or relayed the belief on the FBI's part that Oswald was trying to get out, right? He was trying to get to the USSR.
Yes. Or, you know, or somewhere else. Who knows exactly? Want to get a visa, right? For some reason, possibly even to get into Cuba. And this whole trip that Lee Harvey Oswald took to Mexico City, very close to when the assassination occurred, is one of those things that just has a ton of conspiracy theories surrounding it.
And rightly so.
Yeah.
I mean, that's completely understandable, especially because the U.S. government spent quite a lot of blood, sweat, and tears time trying to convince people otherwise.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden the story's changed.
It's like, oh, wait, we did know he was in Mexico City?
And they're like, we did, we didn't. Well, we did, we didn't.
Well, yeah, and especially when you bring into account the tumultuous relationship that the U.S. had with Cuba.
Right.
Especially right around that time and specifically involving President Kennedy.
So what's next? I really appreciate that you mentioned Cuba here.
Exactly. There's a cable from the FBI in 1967, and it's just a cable, so it's like a, I don't know, something that, well, you, can you explain cables really fast? We talked about these before.
It's like a telegram kind of? Or?
It's just almost just a quick communication kind of thing coming
like
from an operative or from a diplomat or something. It's a lot of times you'll hear cables used with diplomatic communications.
Right. A cable will, depending on the context, a cable can function as a straight point A to point B thing that mm-hmm. is not going to be vulnerable. In theory, vulnerable to the same sort of surveillance techniques that could be used in a traditional letter or something happening over an open line. Mm-hmm. So it's very much like a telegram. But the thing is, with a telegram, for instance, you know, Johnny Q Public could, with the right equipment, just tune in and then also hear whatever's happening, right? So a cable is supposed to be a little bit not like – leak proof, but
more
leak
secure.
Resistant. More, yeah. Leak resistant, more secure. And that's why you hear the folks at WikiLeaks. Julian Assange, is he still locked up?
I think he is. I think he's still just doing the treadmill at the embassy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, WikiLeaks, you know, lives on cables, right? Mm-hmm. Reporting cables. And I bring that up to point out, again, that cables are, in theory, more secure.
And surely I would think that the cable – the term cable probably doesn't mean the same thing as today as it did then. Mm-hmm. And actually it just confirmed – it looks like it just refers to a confidential text message. So I'm wondering if maybe today it might just be some kind of encrypted person-to-person communication.
Ah, see. And now on the document itself, in big, bolded type, it says, sent by coded teletype.
Ah,
right?
Nice.
So there you go.
Okay. So what happened?
Oh, so this was talking about a Cuban gentleman who was being interrogated. There's a lot to go through with this one document for this tiny little thing. But anyway, this gentleman who was being interrogated was asked about whether or not Oswald was a good shot. Like, just, hey, is he, you know, is he mm-hmm. good with the rifle? Is he a good sniper?
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman replied, oh, he was quite good. And then when, you know, he was further asked, like, well, why would you say that? And this gentleman said, well, I knew him.
The
this Cuban officer.
So that's another interesting thing, because you will find a lot of experts and people who spend their entire careers researching just this one day in Dallas in 1963, they believe that Oswald was actually a terrible shot. And a lot of the evidence indicates that he was not the world's best sniper.
And then you'll find opposing evidence or opposing people with the opposing view that he was actually an amazing crack shot.
So maybe one of those theories implies that he was some kind of stooge or
patsy,
a fall guy or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Or was in communication with Cuba or the Soviet Union via Cuba. And
it goes
he was
on.
Amazing. It's like, it's crazy.
It goes on. So remember what we said at the top. The official Warren Commission conclusion was that Jack Ruby mm-hmm. acted alone, right, and just did what he saw as his patriotic duty. I'm killing the guy who killed the president.
Yeah.
You know, instant karma is going to get you, et cetera. Someone, it turns out, as this was revealed in these classified files, someone called the FBI threatening to kill Lee Harvey Oswald a day before his murder.
Wow.
So a document from November 24th of 63 indicated that J. Edgar Hoover actually addressed Oswald's death, specifically referencing that it was at the hands of Jack Ruby. And the quote goes as follows, quote, there is nothing further on the Oswald case except that he is dead. Ouch.
Whoa.
Ouch, Hoover. Hoover then indicated that agents in the FBI's Dallas field office received a call from a gentleman speaking in a very calm tone mm-hmm. who claimed to be a member of a committee that was responsible for Oswald's assassination.
Or there were a committee that wanted to kill Oswald.
Hello. I am a member of a committee of concerned patriots. And we want you to know that as patriots, we are planning to kill the assassin of John F. Kennedy. Thank you for your time.
All right, then. Gonna log that call.
So this situation develops further, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're getting into, of course, we're getting into J. Edgar Hoover, that creep.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he a creep?
He's a creepy dude. Are you serious?
Why do you think he's a creep?
Because he killed Martin Luther King Jr., pretty obviously.
Whoa, dude. I've never heard you that resolute about something like that.
Well, he didn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
But he ran active and illegal campaigns against people that he saw as a threat to his version of the status quo.
I know. He didn't have files on like John Lennon even. Yeah. And like he was basically responsible for tailing anyone he saw as
you're talking about COINTELPRO.
Yeah. Racist, ultranationalist, power mad. Unelected.
I knew all of that, but you used the term creep. I thought you meant he'd.
So anyway, the FBI at this point contacted the Dallas police just to reiterate to them, hey, somebody just called us and was really, really creepy on the phone talking about how they want to kill Oswald. Just do us a favor and protect him. Like, really protect him, please, okay?
Yeah. And they said, yeah, we'll totally do that. And they did not.
Yeah, quote, Ruby says no one was associated with him and denies having made the telephone call to our Dallas office last night. That's something Hoover said.
And Hoover went on to say that the FBI had evidence of Oswald's guilt and intercepted communication he had with Cuba and the Soviet Union.
Oh, boy.
Hoover went on to say he was concerned that there would be doubt in the public sphere about Oswald's guilt and that President Johnson would appoint a commission to investigate the assassination.
Which he did.
Which that actually did happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. However, I think at this point it's important for us to note something we've mentioned on the show before.
Yes.
It's a fascinating thing about the evolution of the phrase, the thought terminating cliche conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
So in the wake of the assassination, U.S. intelligence agencies sent confidential memos to various media institutions of note, like New York Times, Chicago papers, San Francisco, etc. And they said, look, here's the story. Here's the official story. If anyone says something different, make sure to dismiss it and make sure to call it, quote, a conspiracy theory.
It's the originating place of this.
Right. And that's how it entered the mainstream lexicon of the United States. And that's why you have to be very careful. You know, we live in a world where there's an information glut and it's very, very easy for someone to go make a website that purports to be some sort of legit news source, mm-hmm. right? And then just write all kinds of cockamamie stuff, right? But you got to be very careful when you hear everybody, and I mean everybody in the West, calling something a crazy conspiracy
theory. Or calling a person a conspiracy theorist.
Right, or shutting this stuff down. Because, you know, all right, I feel like I have to do the rant. Just briefly.
Dude, okay? Yeah, we've got like 2 more hours in the studio, right? We're good.
Okay, sorry. But just briefly, it is a lack of critical thinking to say that anything called a conspiracy theory is automatically bull poop.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're a family show. So, you know, saying that, for instance, the royal family of the United Kingdom is descended from some secret race of half reptilian alien, half human hybrids that would be called a conspiracy theory, right? Shout out to David Icke.
Okay.
But then people are also calling a conspiracy theory to say that international banks are laundering money for drug cartels.
Well, it's like the whole use of like fake news right now, you know? I mean, all stories and theories are not created equal. And especially when a term is applied as like a term of abuse or like a diminutive, that's when things start getting sketchy. So it's like a conspiracy theory versus a fringe notion or so, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. When you apply that term, it seems to large proportions of the population discount the idea, you know, whole.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a mistake.
Yeah. And, you know, I really appreciate you bringing up the fake news concept. because you're absolutely right. Psychologically, we, our species, are built to seek classification, right? To seek hierarchy, to seek order, which means that it's very, very convenient to wrap everything up in a symbolic phrase and throw that phrase in as a shortcut to critical thinking.
Yeah, it's like, I like jazz, but I don't like fusion.
Right. You know, you're always saying like that.
Yeah.
So now we're already in the thick of it. We're finding out from these released files that at least several things, at least in a few cases, the things that the Warren Commission and the U.S. at large were saying turned out not to be true.
They don't quite jive. Do they?
They don't quite jive. Mm-hmm. No, there's no fusion. There's just jazz.
So let's insert right here, if you haven't already listened to our episode on – or maybe watched our video. I don't know if we have an episode on it – on the Central Intelligence Agency's and the U.S. government's plans and tactics to assassinate Fidel Castro of Cuba, because you need to get that information right now.
We did do a video on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Pause. Go watch that video. Then come back. Well, maybe if you're driving, just hang out.
Should we just go to an ad break to give them time to do it?
We can. Yeah.
What do you say?
What better time than the present? And we've returned. You want to do a couple more specific files?
Yeah, we have to keep going. There's so much stuff here.
Right. I don't know. I candidly do not know if we were going to get to all of it. So we do want your help after you listen to this episode, folks. If there's something that you feel your fellow listeners need to know about this release, please write to us and let us know, and we'll put it on the air as well. So the CIA did consider placing mafia hits on Castro.
Yeah, mafia hits. Mm-hmm. So they, now that you've listened or watched that video, you know that there were some crazy theories or some crazy plans brought up by the government and the United States to kill Fidel Castro.
Exploding cigars, weird umbrellas.
Stuff in wetsuits that
exploding
would poison him.
Exploding cigars?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like from like the novelty store?
Yeah. Well, but
a little more lethal. Yeah, yeah. I gotcha.
But really, crazy stuff that doesn't seem true. Right. In the National Spy Museum, I think you can see some of that stuff.
Right.
There are a couple other places where you can find it. But this specifically was the Rockefeller Commission, a document from 1975, and it was detailing the CIA's role in all kinds of foreign assassinations and specifically plans to assassinate Castro in the early days of the Kennedy administration. Mm-hmm. And the report said that Attorney General Robert Kennedy, the brother of President JFK.
Also assassinated.
Yes. A whole other story, a whole series of episodes, but we'll get into that some other time. He told the FBI that he'd learned the CIA hired some intermediary, another person, a third party, to come through and approach Sam Giancana. Giancana. Does that sound familiar
to
you?
Like from the Terminator movies?
No.
Giancana?
No. Yeah. This was a prominent mafia person, a known mafia person at the time, with the proposition. They approached this guy saying, hey, we're going to pay you $150,000 to get somebody either within your organization or somebody else to kill Castro in Cuba. Like, that's crazy. The government was going to hire mafia hitmen.
Well, I mean, it probably, like, you know, it gives them plausible deniability, right? I mean, if it's not, like, if it's someone that's completely not connected to the government. Like,
oh, yeah. Sure. In this case, it would probably be layer upon layer upon layer if you're talking about the government hiring a mafia guy to hire some other guys.
And I know that 150 grand doesn't sound like a really big amount of money.
But today, right? That'd be
right.
Like,
today, it's today. Yeah, I did the inflation calculation work on this. It's about $1.2 million.
Wow!
I'd do a hit for that.
Well,
what?
Well, here's the problem. Don't ever say that.
I'm sorry, I redact that.
Here's the issue. The Attorney General Robert Kennedy had been trying to prosecute this gentleman. He you know, he's a Sicilian mobster. They've got files on him. They've been trailing him. They've been tracking him. They've been listening to him. They've been trying to get him on something big. And if the government is going to pay him that much money to go do an assassination, it makes the state's case or the government's case a little bit harder to prosecute. Quote, Attorney General Kennedy stated that CIA should never undertake the use of mafia people again without first checking with the Department of Justice.
They didn't check. That's the thing.
You just check in.
The DOJ.
Yeah, exactly.
Just check in.
Because it would be difficult to prosecute such people in the future.
But that's so weird, though. They didn't say, never do this.
No.
They just said, guys, just check in.
Yeah,
okay?
You gotta ask your dad first.
Ask your dad first, yeah.
But it was Robert Kennedy, so it was like, the report also said that the CIA was later interested in using mobsters to deliver a poison pill to Castro, to order to kill him in Cuba.
That was fantastic. And I feel like there's a little bit of, President Obama influence in there at the
end.
Oh,
there was the cadence. Hmm. Yeah.
I think Matt is just owning
you
these
You just got a promotion, my friend.
Yeah. Whoa.
Matt,
whoa. Am I impersonator in chief?
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, so pretend to be a president and call the CIA for us and get this sorted out.
Okay.
Good. Okay, well, we're done here. Everybody have a great week. No, continuing, though, on this one thing that's hugely important about this point in specific is that this sort of contradictory set of pursuits by various government agencies, this situation where the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing, lends a lot of credence and gives a lot of sand to the claims that intelligence agencies in the U.S. and in other countries function as their own independent governments.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you imagine that these independent governments, you know, in their own functionings, sometimes doing the same work or at least overlapping, sometimes just doing vastly different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anyone in charge? When you think about the government that we've elected, the for the people, by the people democracy that we have in this country, like you've got these operating hands, if you will, and this mm-hmm. octopus,
mm-hmm.
like where is the head? I don't think it's the elected officials.
Well, isn't the point that if you cut off one head, it grows somewhere else, that there's so many heads that you don't know which one's the real head?
Oh, my God. What is happening?
I am waiting at some point. I know not everybody loves Marvel movies, but at some point I'm hoping that a stranger, like, shakes my hand and, like, whispers, "Hail Hydra." You know,
you should just start doing that with people.
I can't do it. No.
That'll go over real well at parties.
Yeah. You, it's like you can't give yourself a nickname. You can't be the one who goes up to people and says, "Hail Hydra."
Oh, so I got you. Start the conversation and be like, "Hey, did you hear Taylor Swift's new stuff? Man, I was jamming on it all day. Hail Hydra."
So sorry. Not to derail too much, but I saw this great meme this morning where it was Squidward from SpongeBob, and it was split screen where it's like his eyes closed and it says, "You, when you're asleep and realize Taylor Swift's new album comes out at midnight," and the next frame was the same, his eyes still closed.
My wife is
Paul
stoked.
Shaking his head because he was stoked about it.
Mm-hmm. A single tear.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, and Maria Bamford's new show, or the second season, comes out, too. Check it out. Netflix,
Lady
everybody.
Dynamite, right?
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay. Plugging other shows and albums. Over.
Yes. Well, it's important. This is important stuff, you know, and we are very conscious that this kind of sifting through archival information can be dry, right?
Yeah.
And we also acknowledge that we're talking about stuff that has dangerous implications in the present day.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to keep our chins up about it, but the situation is dire as we record this.
And there are a ton more documents that we didn't discuss. I mean, literally thousands. And each of them probably has a tiny little story to tell. And that's why we're encouraging you to go in and do some of the research yourself, or at least sift through the news sites.
Well, we're not even to the crazy part. Let's laundry list a couple. Okay. So, FBI director. And again, this is a lot of Matt's research, and you need to spot on job, man. Thank you so much.
You got it.
So FBI Director Hoover, right, forwarded a memo to the White House in 63, right after Kennedy's death.
Mm-hmm.
And this memo was classified as top secret for years. And it's exploring the U.S. intelligence agency's best guesses toward the Soviet Union's reaction
to the assassination.
Yeah. And We have a quote here. According to our source, officials of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union believe that there was some well-organized conspiracy on the part of the ultra-right in the United States to effect a coup. They seemed convinced that the assassination was not the deed of one man, but that it arose out of a carefully planned campaign in which several people played a part.
Whoa. Now, are they falling prey to the conspiracy theories?
Are they spreading propaganda? Because we do know after the assassination, the USSR did pretty effectively capitalize on the opportunity to spread dissent. And shout out to General Smedley Butler. We do know that there have been coup attempts in the United States. You're typically not going to read about them in your history books.
Smedley?
Smedley.
Smedley Butler.
S-M-E-D-L-E-Y.
That sounds like a made-up name. I love it.
Speaking of my daddy, George H.W. Bush, his daddy, my grandpappy, he's the guy who supposedly went through and decided to do the business plot. Isn't that crazy? My daddy was a businessman, and his daddy was a businessman. Well, my daddy was a CIA man.
President Bush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for coming by. We're in the middle of a show, though.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry. I'll just go in the corner and do some painting.
Okay.
All right. All right. I'll be over here.
Okay. Hey, can you sleep, Matt?
Yeah.
Why do you keep bringing that guy to this?
Why do you keep letting him push you around like that?
Yeah.
He just like pushes you out of your chair
and then does this his little creepy laugh.
I gotta admit, when he was in office, I know it's okay. I can hear you talking about me over there. I know. Just give me 2 seconds.
Okay.
When he was in office, I wasn't the biggest fan. But afterwards, like, this guy is chill.
Yeah.
Like, he is so cool. He's just painting. He likes to go to games. Like, he likes to go to Braves games.
Did you know he can play the rhythm guitar part for every 311 song?
Dude, I've been trying to learn the piano.
Did you know that amber is the color of his energy?
He keeps saying that. I feel like he thinks that that was his idea, but it's clearly a lyric from 311, right? Okay, so point B, yes, before we get too derailed, these various pieces of information are coming out, and in many cases, if they are not contradicting the official narrative, they are at the very least complicating it.
Yes.
You know, so we have people who are saying, ah, never mind, this official stuff called all a conspiracy theory, but that then at the same time, we are finding secret communiques between people where an intelligence agency is saying, pretty much everybody thinks, like the world's other superpowers, pretty convinced that not one guy did this.
Exactly.
And then they're like, okay, well, don't tell anybody. Just wanted you to know. And let's just keep it secret.
That's so strange, man.
It feels strange now, but we have to understand one of the most vulnerable points of any state power's existence is always going to be the succession, right? The passage of power from typically one individual to another. So, for instance, in the case of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, North Korea, one of the things that is always a big flashpoint and a really dangerous part of time for the world, not just in that region, is when they pass from father to son. Don't know what's going to happen. You know, look at Turkey, right?
Yeah.
Look at Italy. So in the context of the time, this is very, very dangerous for the U.S. It is vulnerable now in a way that it has not been, right?
At least for a long, long time. Since probably the death of Lincoln is the last time that it was that vulnerable.
And let's see one more example, maybe.
Absolutely.
Okay, so for our last entry for the day, we have a document, a top secret document from 1975 that was created for the Rockefeller Commission. And in this document, there is a transcript of a testimony of a former CIA director by the name of Richard Helms. And in this document, Helms says that he believes that former President Richard Nixon, old Tricky Dicky, believed that the CIA was actually directly responsible for assassinating the South Vietnamese president, Ngo Dinh Diem, who died after a coup that was linked to the Central Intelligence Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a quote from Helms himself, right?
We do indeed. It goes as follows. Quote, there is absolutely no evidence of this in the agency records, and the whole thing has been, I mean, rather, what is the word I want? Heated by the fact that President Johnson used to go around saying that the reason President Kennedy was assassinated was that he had assassinated President Diem. And this was just justice.
And then Helms adds, where he got this from, I don't know.
And this, this is during a deposition, and that was the context of the conversation is that Helms was asked if there was any way Oswald was in some way a CIA agent or an asset or an operative.
Or an agent of something else, and that's right when the document ends.
But is this when the story ends? We've given just a few examples, right? And I know that this episode is running a little long because we're digging into this stuff. But the big question is this the whole story? That's where one document ends. Where does the story end? Are we finally in 2017 up to speed on exactly what the U.S. intelligence agency did or did not know regarding this assassination?
I don't think we're there.
Here's where it gets crazy. Some of these files that we mentioned, right, are still secret. They were all supposed to be released, and they were released under, if you're listening to this in the future, they were released under the auspice of the Trump administration, right? But not all of them were released. They were supposed to be, and we have no idea when or even if the other stuff will ever make it into the public sphere. In the 11th hour, right, before this stuff went public, became declassified, intelligence agencies, the FBI, the CIA, all your favorite alphabet soup members of the U.S. government, they pressured Trump successfully, or pressured the administration, I should say, successfully to keep some of this stuff secret past the due date. In light of everybody's favorite boogeyman, national security.
National security, what does that mean?
It's just like tagging base, you know.
Okay.
You know, like anytime you don't want to tell the public something, you go, oh, national security, you know. I'd say I wish I could do that in my private life.
For the good of the realm.
Oh, nice. Can we just say that from now on?
We can try it.
Well, let's call up some of our friends over there in the intelligence agencies and just say, hey, man, from now on, if you're going to say national security.
Dude, those guys are not your friends.
I've been on the phone with the FBI field office a couple of times now working on this other stuff. I think I've got some sway. I know Paul. Paul's got sway all over Atlanta right now.
Super producer Paul, yeah.
Yeah, he can make some calls and just be like, guys, it's now for the good of the realm.
One call, that's Paul.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Better call Paul.
So unless you are as fortunate as the three of us to have a super producer like Paul, right, in your circle, you are probably lost at sea a little bit conceptually when you hear the phrase national security. It's one of those words that just gets thrown around willy-nilly the same way that people used to add the descriptor digital in front of everything in the 90s. Didn't matter what it was. If it was digital, you could charge $5 more. So national security in this context could mean several things. Let's break down into, let's say, three or four things. First is preventing the spread of intelligence techniques, strategies, spycraft.
Highly important.
Absolutely. Just the methods of gathering intelligence, not the intelligence itself.
Right, right. Because if somebody else knows how this stuff was gathered, then the jig is up.
Yeah, they can protect against it.
Right, exactly. This is an understandable concern, right?
In theory. However, we're talking about, what, 1960s and prior to that, maybe a little bit after that, but mostly you're dealing with before the assassination. Mm-hmm. So late 50s, early 60s technology.
So if this stuff is held back to protect techniques from the 1940s
that are literally on display in spy museums around the country,
right? Yes. Then the question becomes, can you plausibly believe, right, apply critical thinking, mm-hmm. can you plausibly believe that some of the world's most well-funded intelligence operatives would still be using the same techniques for decades?
Of course not.
Well, I have to just interject here and say, I think some of the techniques are very much human and psychologically based.
That's a good
point. That perhaps may be existing in some of these documents.
Human, right? Not
yes,
Sigint.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah. Which are the shortened terms for human intelligence mm-hmm. versus signals intelligence. The second category here, genre of national security would be to protect the existing relationship between the United States and a foreign government.
Clearly very important.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we have a lot of what did somebody just called this on NPR, called China and the United States frenemies. But it's we have a lot of those that we've cultivated over the years, those relationships.
There is no such thing as friendship in a geopolitical sphere. There are interests that align.
Exactly. Interests that align temporarily or, you know, maybe in long term for a specific thing.
Sure. So, yeah, I completely agree. Now we have another question. If information is being withheld to protect the relationship, the confidential relationship between two countries, then this would mean that there could either be privileged knowledge. Somebody maybe has a skeleton in the closet, mm-hmm. right? Maybe the Soviet Union knows something that the U.S. public doesn't, right?
Yeah.
Or there could be collusion on the part of another country, right?
No, that would never happen.
No, not here, man.
That's crazy.
That's crazy talk, right? And one example of this would, of course, as we mentioned, be the USSR's efforts to spread propaganda after the assassination, or, of course, similar attempts by the U.S. in other foreign countries.
Very similar attempts.
We're the worst.
Strikingly similar.
We are the worst.
So here's the third genre here.
Yeah.
It could be, when they say national security, it could mean protecting the lives of current or former government officials, right? So let's say one of the theories we hear a lot about JFK is that a Secret Service member accidentally fired the fatal shot.
Yeah, that's one of the theories.
That's one of the theories, mm-hmm. right? Again, unproven, right?
Yeah.
So when we talk about government conspiracies, people often go to the idea of some great collusion in advance, right? The same institution that cannot for the life of it figure out how to do effective policy is also capable of these supervillain level Rube Goldberg machinations, right?
Yeah, it does. Occam's razor lends itself to covering up a mistake.
Right. So how much more realistic is it that someone screwed up and that people are trying to remove that from history? So imagine being a retired official and the public learns that you did something negligent, right? Mm-hmm. Accidental, unintentional, and then you find yourself up a very dangerous creek with no paddle whatsoever, especially in the age of cheap information.
Totally.
So in conclusion here, guys, mm-hmm. the craziest thing is that at least according to Trump's Twitter feed, he has released everything and long ahead of schedule. That's what he's saying. However, it seems pretty certain that there's at least a small number of documents that remain hidden. It seems pretty clear. But what we do have is thousands more documents to tread through. And, you know, as researchers and historians and interns are going through all of this stuff, you know, perhaps there's going to be some new revelation. Maybe not the kind of thing that was hoping for after all of these years, but something.
Surely they wouldn't let it out, though, man. I mean, you know, they know what's in there. They're giving people something to play with and you know, feel good about or whatever, or feel like informed. But there's not going to be an answer. The government wouldn't allow that to happen. I don't think.
And if it's a case of national security, then again, the implications are dangerous. It's 2017.
Yeah.
And if that stuff still applies, I think we can all agree, folks, that the idea of protecting a spycraft technique from the 40s to the 60s doesn't pan out.
It's like tape recorders in suitcases, dude. Like they're on display, like in the spy museum in D.C. It's,
I don't know. Well, in my opinion, there's still the possibility that there's a needle inside this haystack, but just there hasn't been enough time and enough human hands and eyes working through it. So,
will you at least agree with me that the government knows exactly what's in there, though?
Again, we're dealing with the octopus with the different arms.
I don't
arms.
Know if they do.
So, yeah, I
don't know if everybody knows because
there
are factions at play.
There are factions,
I mean?
And it's been a long time, and humans die. That's the one thing we all do.
Now, is there something? There must be. There must be. Otherwise, the intelligence agencies would not have pressured the current administration so strongly not to release some stuff.
In the previous several.
So there is something. Something is rotten in this particular Denmark, right?
So are you planning on going through these files? You can do it. You can find them. Literally search new JFK files and you will find the National Archives link that has a spreadsheet in it. And it also has every single file on that website. So if you have an internet connection and a little chutzpah, you can get in there and just start doing it. Because I've been going through it for the past several days just trying to find things, but there's just too much. And like we said, you're going to find all kinds of weird phrases in there. And there's something I want to point everyone to if you're going to look into this. It's the Mary Farrell Foundation's CIA Cryptomes 2.0. It's a really cool website. You can go to maryferrell.org and you can find this thing. And it has a huge list that's crowdsourced of all these different acronyms and stuff that are used by all the intelligence agencies to represent certain things. And it's fascinating when you go through these documents and you
like
see
like a legend kind of? Like it actually gives you like a little key?
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. And it's not just a, you know, IBEX, OB IBEX equals this or, you know, whatever it is. It gives you a full description of all the different ways that it can be used,
That's
things
cool.
that it can refer to. It's really neat.
I'm on that as soon as we wrap here.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what you find. And while you're online, find us if you haven't already. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. We have names that are all approximations of conspiracy stuff.
Yes.
You know, and we would love to hear your opinion specifically. Have you already looked into this? Do you think that there is something important yet to be revealed?
Did we miss something? Let us know and we'll put it in the shout out.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of shout outs, we want to thank everybody who wrote in to us via various different things, you know, social media, snail mail,
yes.
Mirrors in the dark at midnight.
Cables.
Yeah. We see all of it.
We had it slotted in actually for this episode, but it has run pretty excessively long.
Yeah.
So we're going to hold it back for the next one. But we, you know, I know we don't do it every episode, but we're going to try to get back into doing the shout out corner.
We have an astonishing piece of correspondence that we received recently.
Yes.
And we want to give it its full due. So please do tune in next week because, unlike the U.S. government, we actually release revelatory things.
That's right.
Until we get shot.
That was a sick burn on the U.S. government.
I'm punchy today, man. I'm feeling punchy.
Without actually going to shout out corner, we want to give a huge shout out to Samuel who sent us something in the snail mail.
Mm-hmm.
Can we just say what it is?
Yeah.
These signet rings that go on your pinky and you can seal documents with wax with them.
Yep.
I took the one that has the alien head. I'm very excited about it.
Mine's sort of like a looks sort of like a Coca Pele kind of figure.
Ooh.
I don't think that's what it is, but Samuel, what is it? What's the squiggly one? I took it because I thought it was neat looking, but I don't quite know what it is. Ben's, yours is a Illuminati triangle, right?
Mm-hmm. The all-seeing eye.
Yeah.
So we will put pictures of these rings up and go check us out on Instagram. Our producer's giving us a little bit of a where are you going with
wrap
this, guys?
Wrap
yeah,
it up.
Wrap it up. We're getting the wrap it up. So we are going to wrap it up, and we're going to end this with the most important piece of information for you, which is
hey, guys,
Oh, man. Yeah, George.
George.
If you don't want to do all the social media rigmarole, you can find us, write us an email. We are
Conspiracy
at HowStuffWorks.com.